You're listening to the Music Manumit Podcast for October 4th, 2011. Learn more at musicmanumit.com. Hi, and welcome to another Music Manumit. I'm Tom, and our guest today is a band called Hexmap. They used to be the band called Clawjaw, but they've recently changed their name. The members of the band that we talk to are Mike and Nick. Now, they are the core members of the band. The other members of the band have changed over the years, but now the lineup in Hexmap is Mike, Nick, and Ernie and Ryan. Now, they have a new CD out called Cryptidography. Now, it's technically their first record since it's Hexmap. So it's their first one that they've been doing. They've been working on it for a while, and they are working on another one right now at this very moment. So that will be coming out soon. They've told us about how their music has been used. One of the most unique ways their music has been used under CC license is they heard it as NPR bumper music. That is some of the background information. We talked to them about things like their last album when they were called Clawjaw, mainly about the rock opera that they wrote called Space Crackers. So we spoke with them about that. And why am I telling you all this? For some reason, the recording that I did for this entire thing seemed to have lost the entire first half of it. I went to listen to it when I was editing it, and it just kind of started. And I was looking for the intro that we do, and it wasn't there. And I realized we were already talking, and we were talking about things that were farther on in the conversation. So, sadly, we lost that whole beginning of the conversation. Now, Doug did take some notes while we were talking to them, so you'll be able to see in the show notes some of the questions we asked and what their answers were. But here we pick up wherever in the conversation this decided to start recording. So I apologize to them for that. We will have to have them on the show again and talk to them about it. One of the things that is mentioned as we're talking, the entire time we were talking to them, Nick was in the background working on a skull helmet. So you can hear him from time to time making some noise, and it's him unrolling duct tape and putting it on a helmet and making a skull helmet, and he's working on that in the background. I don't know if we got in the recording why he was doing that. I think he was just doing it. So, and the entire thing was recorded over Google Hangout. So it was one of our first multi-person interviews that we did over Google Hangout, and it turned out splendidly, except for the fact that I lost half of the interview. So here in progress is our interview with the band Hexmap.
But I'm poking around on the Facebook page, and I see that there was a show on August 19th mm-hmm. where there is a bunny and a moose, and the picture before that was a show on July 5th, and the individual there also does not have a human head, some sort of pterodactyl looking head. Mm-hmm, so it doesn't look like you guys are the top bill on either of those. So is this happening, you know, via telekinesis or what's...
I made both of those posters.
There we go.
And swapping somebody's human head with an animal head in an image is a cheap way to make a cool image, I think. And those posters had to be done fast. So I used this trick twice. I think it worked better the second time, though, with the bunny head.
Yeah, I think that although I guess it kind of depends on what you're going for, because the pterodactyl head, the guy is sort of like stepping like he's Godzilla or something.
Yeah,
I kind of like that.
I think I looked for an image of a businessman who was on his way somewhere.
Yeah, since the Clawjaw days, we've really liked the
he's a bounce and a step
businessman aesthetic, I think. We used to sort of pitch Clawjaw as like a global omnicorp that was bestowing its music upon the world as a consumer good that they just couldn't say no to, which I thought was, you know, we thought that was just so clever. So we don't really mess around with that anymore now that we're brooding.
Disdain.
But we still have great disdain for the world of mega corporations, so we're happy to put pterodactyl heads on businessmen on flyers.
Very nice. So you also have a fish on the Space Crackers mm-hmm. album cover, which has nothing to do with space, and a bicycle, which is not space-oriented.
So that. Well, a lot of the stuff that seems maybe out of place on that kind of thing, it goes back to jokes that we were making back when the entire thing was a joke, maybe. And I think the first song that we actually wrote for the entire record was just sort of this repetitive chant that that ended up being, you know, about these fish evolving and riding bicycles someday. Mm-hmm. And it ended up making it into the plot because we were just like, it's of paramount importance that we include every stupid thing we've ever said on this record. And so we did. And so there's a point, you know, that I don't know if I want to reveal the plot too greatly on Spacecrackers, but for anybody out there who still has not heard it and doesn't know what happened, which I
there's nobody.
I don't know who that is.
It came out 5 years ago. Everybody's heard it by now.
It's like the Crying Game. If you haven't seen the plot twist at the end by now.
Too late. Yeah. So, okay. So, well, at the end, everything blows up. But non-chronologically, the sort of instrumental song in the middle that has the chant about the fish happens, you know, 100 million years in the future after everything blows up. And it turns out that even though we thought that it was a really bad, horrible, negative ending because, you know, the entire Earth was destroyed and there are no people left and the aliens are all dead and basically everything's dead, something survived and evolved and it was fish. And now they ride bicycles. And
not the band. The actual sea creatures.
No, the actual sea creatures.
Oh, thank God.
Fish just Vermont was spared.
Wildly jamming in an empty world.
Yeah. You see, when the bomb went off, Fish, the band, was in a submarine. And they were the only people in submarines at that point.
Well, yeah, no, them and the people that twirl around while they play.
Yes.
So
there you have it.
Who twirls around while they play?
Have you ever seen any sort of live concert like that?
Hippies, man.
They're called twirlers at the
shows.
That
was me. That was me several years ago.
Oh, wait. Yeah. The band twirls around or the people audience twirl?
Oh, the band twirls around sometimes, too.
Well, that's true.
Bands are
very democratic environment, yeah.
That's what I haven't seen is the bands twirling around.
They've got, like, trampolines sometimes.
That would be
difficult. Yeah.
You would get dizzy and fall over and...
Sometimes that's what people pay for.
They pay for the twirling. I came here for the twirling, damn it, and I'm gonna see it.
There you go.
Now when you write a rock opera, and you know, and I, sorry, we keep going back to this. I mean, I want to talk about the new stuff. Did you do research for doing this, like on how to write one, or did you just wing it?
No, I think we considered it. Yeah. We considered writing a story and writing an album at the same time, so we just thought about both angles of it.
We also had a few songs that were already, if not done, already conceived, so we just had to fit those into a story, and it wrote itself. Well, not really, but we had to shape it around that.
For 3 years, it wrote itself. Very diligently.
So there was nothing that you were referencing or like, oh, no, I love the way that this band did.
No, I mean, we definitely listened to, you know, rock operas. I mean, a lot of bands that I really like. Like I said before, you know, I really like concept stuff. So, I mean, I was listening to Tommy, obviously, and Ziggy Stardust, and Arthur by the Kinks is one of my favorite records.
Oh, right.
And all that stuff has, you know, there are pieces of that we could sort of learn from tone-wise. You know, the music we were writing was not necessarily similar to that, although it's kind of funny because people listen to it afterwards, they hear the word rock opera and they compare it to like David Bowie or Queen or something. It really doesn't sound like that. But like, you know, the connection is there. I think tone-wise we thought about the arc that the album takes and the structure that it takes and the way that the energy kind of flows as the, you know, starts as something kind of stately, like it states a theme, you know, halfway through maybe you restate the theme. You've got songs that call back to other songs. You know, once you've got those concepts in mind, then you just try to write the songs around them.
Yeah, there's not a reprise, which I am happy of, because I just find those irritating.
No, we don't go there, but there are certain the songs that I think Spacecrackers, the track, the one that's 20 minutes long, references harmonically probably like four or five other songs on the record. There are chord progressions in there. Some of them are transposed, so when I listen now, I kind of forget about it unless I'm thinking about it. But the best that you get for a reprise is the Dr. O theme when he's giving his farewell speech, the space school refrain comes back for a second, but it's a very, very tender moment. Our friend sang that from the balcony at the Brattle Theater when we played that live. He got up there in the crowd and sang it out to everybody.
It was moving.
Well,
that's cool. Now, do you have friends? You've mentioned this theater a couple of times. Are you friends with this theater or?
I mean, I like them a lot, but this is just a one-time event that we sort of were like, okay, we want to do this weird thing. Will you let us do it? They said yes. So they're our friends forever for that.
Oh, well, good. Yeah. They get to come to the shows for free and all that kind of stuff. So
sure. Yeah.
You heard
the
it here.
Itself.
So yeah. What are the ambitions for the band? You said you don't have any shows lined up, but you've had some shows in the, you know, in the recent past. I think the 19th, I think I saw, which was just last week or 2 weeks ago. No, it was last week. It was Monday.
Yeah.
So obviously
it was 2 weeks
active.
Ago when this is home.
right. That's true.
I mean, we've got some shows that, I mean, I'm in the midst of, you know, putting together some more shows. I just don't have anything confirmed yet, which makes this a really great promotional opportunity for us. I really took advantage of this one. We are in the process of writing a second record, well, second Hexmap record. We've got most of the material for it demoed. It's not really concept-based, but I imagine that once the lyrics get finalized, it'll...
Yeah, there's hardly any lyrics for it, so... Maybe it will be concept-based, and we don't know it yet, but, yeah.
But
I doubt it.
It's got a much different sound, I don't know, it's a lot less abrasive.
I hope you like things that are brooding.
Yeah, it's brooding. We're listening to a lot of early Cure,
You sit in the corner in the dark, putting lipstick on, just thinking about how people have wronged you.
Well, I mean, look at Nick. He's making a skull, right? He's in the dark making a skull, right?
And I do. Can I just
coming
say?
Along.
Yeah, it is. Ooh, wow, actually, it has. You've made quite a dent into that. Wow. I do have to say, I love the fact that, like, while this is going on, that, like, you're just doing something in the background, like working
Before
away
you,
on something.
He does more than that. He just finished. He's almost done with a solo record that he just finished up.
Really?
So he's a pretty productive guy. I just hang on Rudy H.P. Lovecraft on my Nook, but meanwhile, he's recording a solo record.
I have to say, you guys have answered our questions in advance of us asking them, like, 7,000 times. Actually, we didn't have that many questions.
Well, you can edit your questions in.
What was better when you answer them ahead of time.
Yeah, it's really funny, because usually we got to find a way to fit in the next question, and it's like, we'll get ready to do that, and then you guys will, like, say it, and it's like, oh, they're answering that one. Cool, we'll just roll with it.
All right.
Yeah, but that was one of the questions, is if you guys had other projects, musical or otherwise?
Well, my album that I'm just finishing up now, which should be out in a few months, I guess, because they still have to get it mastered and all that, is not very, it's not brooding. I think it's kind of, I had a lot of pent up not brooding music because we've been working on things that was brooding for so long.
So it's like the happy REM songs?
He announced it to me as he was basically like, here's a list of songs that I think you will hate. And that's why they're not going to be Hex Map songs. tell me what you think of them. They're really good. So
actually, I think one or two of them were
Clawjob
songs that we were working on right after Manifest Destiny came out, and then we changed directions, and so I've resuscitated them, put them on this album.
You just really wanted to have whatever thing that was in it out
there
for
good.
The people.
They're good songs. It would have been a shame if they were never finished.
Yeah, one of them is about a cryptid, sort of a cryptid, and if you hear it, you'll know why it's not on Cryptidography. It's pretty clear.
It doesn't fit it at all. Conceptually, what we did for Cryptidography and what we do for most of our records is we write way more songs than we actually need. And the goal is to write just enough of a song to know whether it's going to work or not, and then abandon it immediately so we don't waste time on it if it's not. But if it is, then keep going. So what we usually do is write more than we need so we can strip a record down to the good ones. And we were doing so much research for cryptids that we had a pile of cryptids that we wanted to write songs about. And some of them lent themselves to good songs, and some of them didn't. And then some of the songs that were written kind of worked together, and some of those didn't. So.
We worked on this album for a long time. It was actually, we had the idea for Cryptidography in 2007, right after, basically when we were done, you know, putting out Space Crackers. and we put out Manifest Destiny in the middle of writing Cryptidography, but we were actually writing it right from the very beginning of 2007. So we got a lot of material that we didn't use.
And then the sound had changed by the time we were really focusing on that one. We liked working on multiple projects at the same time, because if you're working on a concept project, the framework is pretty rigid for what's going to fit. And sometimes it's hard to keep the creative flow going. So it's good to have a few projects going at the same time, because then if one doesn't really work, it's not coming, you can just start working on something else, and eventually one of them will be done. But yeah, the sound changed, and we were like, oh, this isn't really going to be a collab record after all. So there we are.
So are you just going to go by your name, Nicholas, or are you going
to... Trying to think of the new band name for Hexmap was so traumatizing. I'm hoping to never have to think. I like to think of bad band names. Recently on the way to the show, we thought of, because you can't, how many times can't you fold a paper?
Eight.
I thought it was, eight times. Or
so
eight
the band name was Nine Times Folded, right?
And doesn't that sound like a horrible band? Nine times folded?
Like Matchbox 20 or something? Like,
Which I didn't even get the concept of that until, truthfully, this is a true story. Until a week ago, I did not know that Matchbox 20 was because there are 20 matches in a matchbox.
Oh my God! You just dropped that on me right now.
that's news to me.
I had no idea. Which that was. Doesn't that make it even worse?
I was just gonna say it's not really giving it much resonance for me.
No.
So they're matches.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Book of Matches is basically what they should have called their band, but they're like, that's not fancy enough.
I see what they did.
I see what you did there. Yeah. Either that, another good band name would be Not the Huey Lewis Review.
Oh.
You know, something like that, because that way you're using the name, but you're saying you're not Huey Lewis.
It's honest.
So, you know.
It's certainly honest.
Get the recognition. Maybe some of that sought-after SEO juice that you're looking for. That sounded gross. I have SEO juice all over me.
We did sacrifice some of that SEO juice when we stopped being Clawjob, but you know, I don't think that the landscape out there is a lot different now than it was, you know, a few years ago. There's so much music on the internet. I think people are just inundated with that, and they're not looking for it the same way that they used to. They're not just going to poke around on MySpace or whatever and just look for music, because like there's 100 billion bands on there, and most of them suck, and that's just not a productive use of your time. So you got to find other ends. The SEO is, I think, a bit less of a help than it used to be, maybe.
So you don't have high hopes for the Justin Timberlake MySpace relaunch that's supposed to be coming in a week or so?
I don't really know. But actually, you know, speaking of SEO, one of the many fake projects that Clawjob had that we never finished was the Search Terms EP. You remember that, Nick? We were going to name all the songs with titles
search
that were really just... Yes, titles that would show up in a lot of searches for us. Like, there's gonna be a track called like Photoshop Hack Serial, and Lindsay Lohan Nude XXX, and
now surprisingly, we never wrote any of those.
I like that.
I'm saying we start with a concept sometimes.
I wish that one would have come through. I would have liked to have seen that one, and also just to hear how you would have written that. Like, how would you have written a song about Photoshop hacks?
I don't know. I mean, that's why we.
That's where that project gets stuck.
That one broke down pretty quick.
Sometimes the ideas are just too big.
We were going to do another one where it was a 5-song EP where the 5 songs were the top 5 listeners. The names of the songs were the top 5 listeners on Last.fm, and then just sort of release it with no fanfare and never realize that there was a song named after them. But like, it's just when you write it yourself and you record it yourself and you put it out yourself, like, that's a lot of work for a joke. That's a lot of work for a joke.
Yeah, but it's a pretty sweet joke.
Eventually, hopefully, you know, eventually. That's what happened with Spacecracker. So hopefully, that was a pretty sweet joke.
I love the album.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, like the thing that's tough about making music that's kind of fun is that it's hard to be, like, it's hard to have something be funny but not be a total joke. It's hard to be kind of goofy but not have it be like we weren't kidding. We really worked hard on that record, but at the same time it's like obviously tongue-in-cheek.
Speaking of Spacecrackers, the title, came about from years ago. We were sitting around trying to think of the stupidest title for a space rock opera. This is, you know, 5 or 6 years before that album came out. And then you know, a few years later when we were writing it, we thought, well, should we call it Space Crackers? Sure.
Yeah. Sort of
a joke.
And that's but, it. Like, so then it ended up being in the plot, like a critical plot point.
Literally, that name was thought up to be the worst name for...
So you see how we're sort of kneecapping ourselves from the very beginning here. We had to sort of be reborn because we were officially making the worst decisions possible on purpose. And then we were just like, we really need to change our methodology here. Like, we're...
Because you kept forgetting that the outcome was you?
Yeah. Yeah, basically that was it. That was exactly
it. Would be awful if a band did this, and we're doing it.
There's no hiding from it. Exactly. Yeah.
I don't know. I like stuff like that. Sort of self-reflective, you know.
The thing is that it's hard to be self-reflective when nobody has any idea who the hell you are. And so it's like they don't have enough context to understand, interviews like this are kind of fun, and you know, they don't really happen all that often, but like, we get an opportunity to be like, check us out, like, we did this stupid thing specifically for this stupid reason, and that's why this happened. And most people just hear it, you know, and then they're like, oh, okay. Like, it's a song about crackers. Okay. It's like, no, you guys don't get it. It's so much more than that. It's a joke about crackers that we made 6 years ago. And then they're like, oh, you guys are geniuses. I see.
So your next album should be called You Just Had to Be There.
Yeah, I suppose so. We were going to do a sequel to Space Crackers actually called Time Crackers, which has a whole plot, but then we were just like, we got to get out of here before. Mm-hmm.
If a female had come up with the Space Crackers name, the next album could be That's What She Said.
That's true.
Oh. Well,
I don't even remember who said it. I don't know. That's the thing. This kind of stuff happens long enough ago that you don't even remember who to credit for the terrible idea. You just have to be on board with it going forward with it.
You could do like in the when people decide after a movie is made that they don't want to attach their name as the director, they just put the name Alan Smithy.
Exactly, the Alan Smithy.
Yeah, you could do that.
You spend enough time on something, sometimes you just, you know, we couldn't blame studio tampering, you know, like there was no executive who came down and complained about our plot and changed it. That was all us.
But you could write a concept album about that.
We could. I think the Kinks already did that a few times, right?
I don't know. There was
Lola.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's another good one that I like to listen to while we were working on that.
And then, of course, the Weird Al Yankovic version, Coca-Cola.
Yep.
I believe.
What? Is Yoda.
Oh, Yoda. Damn it. You're right. But he does say Coca-Cola
in the original, in the real song.
Yeah.
You can edit this out, don't worry.
Yeah.
You've got a week. That's true.
That's true. Gotta be artistic with it.
I gotta listen to this when it comes out so you don't like I don't know what your editing skills are. Maybe you're just gonna make us say all sorts of horrible stuff.
No, usually I just take the person we're interviewing out completely and it's just me and Doug talking. So
that sounds fair. This has been a great conference call, guys. That's fine.
Yeah, it's an avant-garde podcast.
Yeah.
The people have to guess.
One side of a conversation.
Yeah, so in between, I just put, like, you know, the Jeopardy music and then our answer to it, so the people have to think, what were we just talking to them about? Or what would their answers be? It's a thinker.
Right.
This is changing the subject radically, but
do it.
I wanted to throw this in here before mm-hmm. we got gone. But you have an individual on your website who has a Space Crackers tattoo.
Oh, man.
Is this real? Who is this person? What's
real.
Going on with that?
It's a real tattoo. She just wanted a picture, as far as I know, of a fish riding a bicycle. So she, you know, Googled it and found our album cover and got the tattoo. And I don't know how you found it. Mike, you found that online.
I found it. I think she contacted me. I don't remember, though.
I don't know.
You guys are probably familiar with, you know, like a man needs a woman like a fish. A woman needs a man like a fish needs a bicycle.
Right.
God needs what is it? A man needs God like a fish needs a bicycle. Various people have used that. For their proclaiming their strength and stuff like that. And I think she was coming from the feminist slant, and she wanted that tattoo. And Nick had drawn a really good fish and a bicycle, and she went there. Man, I'd probably be a little more judicious about using. I'd probably find out a little bit more about the band.
She hadn't heard the music. Once she got the tattoo, I contacted her after we found out, and I sent her the CD.
Just to be like, here you go.
I hope she liked it at all.
Yeah, I mean, imagine if she was like, she found out that, like, you know, she'd gotten this awesome feminist tattoo and then she listened to the record and we're like these total ranting misogynists and now she's got like the tattoo on of our album cover on her shoulder.
And she'd just be, I've made a huge mistake.
I know, but that's a feeling I don't ever want somebody to feel, but it's a possibility there, so.
Yep.
Everything turned out okay, though, I think.
Well, good. And I mean, that says something at least, Nick, about your, about the design you did. So, I mean, someone just sought it out and did it. And I mean,
well, I mean, yes, it's, I mean, it was a good, it was a really well done tattoo, but I've seen some tattoos that are regrettable. So I don't know if it says anything good about my art necessarily.
You got to go with it, man. You got to allow that to make you feel motivated.
Yeah, it definitely means I'm a genius, but other than
that. Oh, there you go.
I don't know.
That's right. Yeah. Own up to what you are.
Quote again? Have we mentioned us being geniuses enough?
No. No, but you got some time to fit it in a few more if you want. I mean, that's cool.
Okay.
And, you know, any other tattoos that you have yourself that you regret, you can bring that up as well. Like, I regret my thug life on my stomach one. So.
At least it's not on their back.
No, like, no, that would be trashy.
Oh, yeah.
So
I don't have any that I regret yet. I'll let you know if I do.
Okay.
So, all right. I think we've come to the let's get all the questions out that we were going to ask part of the show.
Okay.
Is that where we are, Tom?
We're at the speed round. That is correct.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. we have glossed over this a bit. But why do you use the exact license that you use, the BYNCSA?
Why do we do that?
I think I picked that one. I like it. I like how unrestricted it is. But you know, when you make music, I think I would consider it an honor if anybody ever wanted to take something that I made and remix it. I would never want to get in their way. But I do. I think I want a little production protection there, just in case, you know, like I said aforementioned, like crazy misogynist club, you know, like wants to use my music, and I would really like the legal, you know, viability to say, hey, you can't do that. But aside from that, I don't care. Anybody can do anything they want.
Yeah, but that's one we picked first. I think we kind of just kept using it because we don't want to figure it out again.
Yeah.
So this is one that we've sort of touched on, but we haven't really gotten a, you know, pointed answer to. What advice do you have for people that are either in bands and sort of trying to take the next step? I mean, basically, if you could do anything with your band, you know, as far as a promotional aspect and keep everything Creative Commons, what would you do? And what are you doing? What has been useful, productive sorts of promotional tools?
Well, a really good one used to be Last.fm, but then it was bought by CBS and it's not useful anymore. So yeah. I'd say probably just try to stay on top of the new technology as it comes and use things when they're there, because it's pretty soon they'll be bought out by something and then they won't be friendly to you anymore.
Yeah, I think that's good advice. Last.fm was really great before. It had a lot of... they still have a lot of power in there that they're just not leveraging in any sort of artist-friendly way. And I think they're hurting their listeners as well. They used to have all sorts of great music discovery tools that they've since disabled because CBS is crazy about the copyright.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a good idea. And I just think the other thing about it is, like, I think most new musicians and younger musicians already feel this way, which is you know, just anybody who wants to listen to your music, just get it to them. Allow them to listen to it. Don't construct arbitrary boundaries, like, you know, making them, you know, fill out, you know, X to get to Y or something like that. I think that there's too much stuff out there to make people wade through that in order to get to your thing. People don't have the patience to do that for something that they haven't even really heard yet. You know, it's really a totally different environment now than it was even just, you know, 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I first started doing music online with, like, mp3.com in, like, 1999. And at that point in time, you know, like, there was nothing online. Pretty much, like, the major labels were on mp3.com, just like the regular, just like the total, you know, like, college kids, like, made. But now it's just flooded. And whatever you have to do in order to get people to check your stuff out, just do it and make it easy.
Very cool. So again, one that we touched on, but some specifics on bands that are doing Creative Commons stuff, maybe somebody you think is really awesome that we should try to get on the show. We're booked up for a little while, but we're always looking to have other bands on the show.
Or even discover new music.
Yeah, that too.
That Trent Reznor is pretty cool stuff. I don't know if you could get him on the show.
I wouldn't be surprised if Doug had sent him an email to tell you the truth, at least once.
Okay, well, you can air his episode after ours. Yeah. Put a teaser in. No, I don't know. I mean, the licensing aspect of what we do, we've been doing for long enough now that I just sort of take it for granted. I'm just like, how it is. And I don't know that I really focused hard on the licensing that other people use. I've just encountering that kind of Creative Commons stuff throughout. Mm-hmm. I think the pay what you want model is, you know, in addition to the licensing, you know, the big talk in the industry right now. And that's something that I think is kind of interesting, because that works for some bands and certainly doesn't work for others. But I think it's making it increasingly difficult to be a working musician. But I never really expected that from my music anyway, so I'm not surprised or disappointed.
We're making it hard for the people who are working musicians by not
giving music away,
not trying to sell it for $15 and then being happy when nobody wants it.
And cluttering up the internet with our music.
Yeah, that's true. That's bad too.
Yeah,
because we got to keep that internet nice and clear.
So, right. So we don't want it was in 1997.
Right, not a lot of garbage out there.
It was just web rings. Everything was really clean. Just web rings. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Web rings. Oh, yeah. That's fun.
We were there. We know about web rings.
You kids and your social networking.
Oh, you could connect right to each other, but we used to have to go around in circles.
You had to join things. So is there anything that you'd like to, you know, say to the people out there, or say hello or tell them about that we haven't covered today that you'd like to mention?
I don't know. I mean, I guess I would like to... I don't think that we're ever disappointed if people listen to our music and don't like it. I think the hard part is just getting people to listen to it in the first place. So, if people want to check it out, we have, you know, hexmap.bandcamp.com. It's all up streaming.
Hexmap.net, awesome. Hexmap.net will be up on today, October 2nd.
That's true. So you go there and you can stream or download it. We'll have a new record coming out pretty soon. And I don't know. Did we clearly indicate what it sounds like? We know what it's about. But
feel free to say what it sounds like.
Do you guys play music on this show?
Yes.
We have two
of them. We have a talk show and we have a music show.
You should play one of the tracks on your music show, and then people can just listen to it.
Yeah, there you go.
It's hard for us. It's hard for, you know, to describe your own music.
Yeah. No, it's not. It's supposed to be the most basic thing that you're able to do. I'm pointing at you in the camera now.
I see. It's really hard. It's as good as the Beatles, but like louder. Is that good?
Nice. I like it.
I like that.
I like it. That's a soundbite right
that's
there.
That's the show title, I think, Tom.
And that's what Trent Reznor said about it, at least.
Mm-hmm. That's the other beautiful thing. You got to be able to tell a good lie, because nobody knows if you're telling the truth or not, especially on the internet.
But it's
today.
Not a lie. It's not a lie. It's going to happen on September 29th.
That's right.
Yeah. And then on October 2nd, you guys will be like, oh, wow, he really did say all that stuff.
Like, goddamn, I regret saying that it was a lie to him. I am an ass.
I know. I'm going to bomb him on Twitter for 4 days until he acknowledges that I said that he said that.
So. I want you to do that now. I really do.
I'll think about it.
Yeah. Go ahead, Tom.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, I'm just up in New Hampshire, and I haven't actually made it down to Boston yet, but definitely let me know when you guys are playing, and eventually I'll make it down to Boston.
All right. You just moved up there, didn't you?
I did a little over a month ago now.
So. Oh yeah, how's that going? I'm originally from New Hampshire, and Nick's from Maine.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in the area.
Yeah, it's different.
Yeah. Wait till winter hits. Wait till October 1st.
Well,
something crazy's gonna happen then.
I've been living in Wisconsin, so I'm not scared of the winter. But the thing is that I've always lived in college towns, like literally, because my dad's a professor. I've always lived in college towns, And even though I'm going to law school in this town, it is not by any stretch a college town. Everything closes at 6 o'clock on a Sunday.
Is it run by grandparents 1950? Or something?
Yeah,
no, I don't that's kind of how New Hampshire rolls. Yeah, there was it's not the easiest place to find something to do when you're a teenager, especially.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, we're all Puritan pilgrims up here, right?
Apparently.
Still.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wanted to go get something to drink because I've got to go to class earlier than normal tomorrow. So I'm like, you know, I'll get something to kickstart my day, and it's like 6:50. And I'm like, all right, I'll go to the grocery store. The grocery store closes at 7 fucking o'clock.
Yep.
Like, who does that?
I live in you know, Somerville, like basically Boston. And the supermarket down the road from me closes at 7 on Sundays too. And 9 during on other days. So it's not a fluke.
I'm used to the world of grocery stores being open 24/7. That's what I'm used to.
The grocery store near me is open 24/7.
Yeah, I was going to say, grocery stores are supposed to be grocery stores, and then at some point in time, half of it is a bank or some sort of fast food chain. That is what's supposed to happen.
Yeah.
You're supposed to be fitting more things into things.
Between 2 a.m. and 5 a.m., it's just an empty warehouse with no people in it, except a couple of sad dad guys and one card person.
People that don't have internet for porn. So they have to go buy it.
Sad dads in the supermarket at 3 a.m. That's poignant.
Yes, it was. That's deep.
Well, like I said, I do have to get up way earlier than normal tomorrow morning. And this has been a really awesome interview. Like we said, when it's really easy for us when people are answering the questions that we want to ask before we ask
them.
So
it's easy for us when we just never shut up. Thanks for allowing us the opportunity to not really be calm about our own stuff and just continue talking about it forever.
Yeah, no problem. And thanks for coming on the show. It was really nice talking to you guys. So we want to thank Mike Ender. I really do love this thing where I can hover over your name and remember who you are.
Not even my real name. That's the funny part. That's not my last name.
Get out.
That's just my Gmail name.
Okay, well then thank Mike and Nick. There you go.
You're going to have to go back and bleep out when you say that last name on the early parts of the show.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. My last name is Gintz. My name is Mike Gintz.
Really?
And that is Nicholas Burgess.
Well, you got that right already.
Right.
Yeah. You can see it. It's right on Bandcamp. It's the real deal. It's just, for some reason, I don't know, my Gmail name is not that. I never even really thought, I didn't think forward to the Hangout portion of this.
That's
true.
You
were going to get fake information from me. Yeah.
Well,
we talked a couple of weeks ago about how I don't have my appropriate birthday on the internet. It's just, I don't know.
Yeah, he's like 19 everywhere or something like that. No, I don't even know.
Well, actually, yeah, a lot of times I just sort of pick, if it's like must be 18 or over, I just sort of pick the year that where I would be 18. And my birthday my birthday is January 1st, like everywhere.
Oh.
So.
Well, anyway, as I was saying.
That wasn't really very important anyway. I'm sorry. You can edit that part out. You can totally edit that out. You can edit the last 10 minutes out.
Nah, it all depends on if I get lazy or not.
This is the best part of the show. So,
all right.
But, no, once again, thanks for coming on here. And that's HexMap that we were talking to today. And I want to thank you for joining us on the Music Manumit podcast at musicmanumit.com.